Good morning. This is Real Estate for Breakfast podcast. I'm your host, Phil Coover, partner in Ice Miller's Real Estate Group. Today, we have a longtime friend, Matt Pistorio, who is the founder of Madison Rose, a brokerage company, as well as a principal with R2 Companies. Matt, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me, Phil. Appreciate it.
Matt, this is a great person to have as a topic. I love talking about office right now, especially in major metropolitan areas. You're the leader.
You may be the only one.
No, it's super interesting. And you're the leader, in my mind, of downtown office, have been for a long time through a couple companies. And R2, super interesting company, has made a big bet on in that trophy asset in Chicago that we'll talk about in a second. But I thought for right now, you mentioned to me that sometimes people are confused by your involvement in two different major companies in Chicago. So why don't you start by talking about Madison Rose and R2 and how your life interconnects there.
Yeah, I should probably take a step back and just tell you kind of how I got to where I got. Where I am today. And, it all started, after I graduated college, not too long after you and I parted ways at U of I. I had to do an internship for my major. And I was working at a ski shop in Glenview, which I'd worked at since probably 14 years old. And I'd sold the guy a pair of ski boots. And with that transaction, he ended up hiring me at Cushman & Wakefield, where I worked for 11 months. After 11 months, I got recruited to go work at the J.F. McKinney and Associates Company, which is a brokerage house, was formerly a brokerage house. So it's very similar to Madison Rose, where all they focused on was agency leasing. So we only represented owners and landlords. And 4 years into that, I left with my partner at the time, Brian Whiting, to launch another boutique brokerage landlord focus house called the Telos Group, where we grew that company from about 4 million to 25 million square feet in, a 5 or 6 year period. And then, ended up going to the principal side. I think it's kind of the, it's like the next evolution. I feel like if you're a broker wanting to get on that ownership side, and that's where, I started working with R2 Companies. Matt Garrison, being the managing partner there, brought me on as a principal. And so I was at R2 for about a year and a half and loving what I was doing, got approached by AmTrust Realty to oversee their 6 million square foot portfolio from a leasing standpoint in Chicago. And, that was an opportunity that I'd never expected would come, but it was an opportunity to start my own leasing company, similar to what Telos or J.F. McKinney was. And I felt that there was more space for another brokerage group only focusing on landlord work in Chicago. I spoke to my partners and told them about the opportunity, and they were really supportive of it, supportive of me having essentially two jobs. There really is no connection between R2 and Madison Rose. Madison Rose now does some leasing for some R2 controlled managed buildings or owned buildings. 150 North Michigan, which one I know we'll talk about, which Madison Rose leases on behalf of R2. And then also the Chicago Board of Trade building, which R2 asset manages and manages on behalf of Apollo, who took that building back deed in lieu of foreclosure. Madison Rose does the leasing for that project. And that was due to the synergies that, R2 teams, still have. So although we do work together on some projects, the companies are completely separate. The employees at Madison Rose are all only Madison Rose employees. There is no, contributions from, R2 to the Madison Rose employees. So, it's two separate companies, which I know could be confusing at times, for some people in our industry, but, honestly, it gives our team, Madison Rose team, a lot of exposure to the ownership side, which a lot of leasing brokers don't have, sight into. And I think it makes us smarter. I think it makes us savvier brokers. It even sometimes makes us worse brokers, because when you start to think like an owner, it actually, I think it's almost like a step back in your brokerage negotiating abilities, because you're getting too lost in basis and some of the other things, and sometimes you lose focus of the fact that getting a deal done at all costs is always the most important thing. And we always say, I've always said that there's really no deal that you do that you regret, or certainly I haven't. So, you know, that's kind of the connection between Madison Rose and R2. I think there are some similarities where we are both design focused companies. We both are kind of marketing focused companies. I think we kind of have set the trends in utilizing things like social media and LinkedIn and videos. And so I think there's some similarities in you know, literally all the people at both companies have a love for architecture and design and historical buildings. And so there's also some similarities there as well. But outside of that, they're two different firms. And, you know, like to me, it's just, you know, I have two different email inboxes and it's just a day in the life. And so there's not, it's not like, it's like, oh, I got to do R2 stuff today and I got to do Madison Rose stuff today. It's just, you know, two separate inboxes. It's all part of my day. And I have incredible teams. My team at Madison Rose is just absolutely fabulous, and they're total rock stars. And I mean, they literally can run the company on their own, and just great partners and teammates at R2 make it actually relatively seamless to do both.
Yeah, it's incredible, man. I like just had a panic attack thinking about two inboxes. I was like, holy moly. I already
had. No, you add Gmail. Plenty. You add Gmail in there and it's three inboxes.
Yeah, for sure. Been wanting to ask this for a long time, but while we're talking about your career and your backstory, is just, how are you doing this? I remember just like, I'll see your name pop up in cranes over the years. Like even when we were like younger, not that we're old now, but like a little bit. I remember like you pop up doing these major transactions. And I'm like, how is Matt pulling this off at such a young age? You know, with Telos, you guys started a company and then you're all of a sudden doing major transactions in Chicago. I do think your attention to design is noteworthy. Like everything you do and your companies you're involved with, very sleek, very crisp. And it's not just fluff, it's streamlined communication. You're an effective communicator. You've always had a high motor, high energy. Yeah. So just like what's your secret?
Yeah, you know, I always have been passionate about sales. I mean, that literally has come out from the 15 years that I worked at a ski shop in the suburbs of Chicago. I feel like if you can sell skis in the suburbs of Chicago where you don't have access to a ton of skiing, you can sell anything. And again, I am passionate about what I do. I love what I do. I wake up at 4:30 every morning, excited about the day, despite, you know, all the turmoil that we've been going through for the last 4 years. For some reason, I don't get burnt out. And honestly, now working with a lot of younger employees and seeing the passion and training them and mentoring them, you know, I find, you know, joy in that. But, you know, when I was younger, you know, I was super blessed to have an incredible mentor who was Brian Whiting. And, you know, Brian, you know, hired me at McKinney. He launched the Telos Group and brought me on and brought me on as, you know, his partner. And, you know, he gave me opportunities. I think a lot of senior brokers wouldn't, you know, they wouldn't give a 28, 29 year old kid major responsibilities. And that's like leading projects like Prudential Plaza in that redevelopment, you know, the Aon Center and the Old Main Post Office. And he had a lot of confidence in me and he let me go and he didn't, you know, over micromanage me and he let me make mistakes, which is something that I do right now with my team. And so I've learned. And I think having a mentor like that who, you know, Brian was also a visionary. And, you know, he was very creative and I learned a ton from Brian and, you know, I took what I learned from Brian and I evolved and kind of started going to, you know, my own way and starting to create, you know, the things that I was good at and kind of started to find my own way. And he encouraged that. So I think having a mentor that, you know, looks out for you is so important, you know, especially when we always talk about like work from home and what we're seeing. And I just don't understand how these younger kids who are working from home get any kind of mentorship because it's just so important. And without it, I honestly wouldn't be like where I was today. And I think, you know, having the opportunity to work on big projects that were exciting projects, that were bringing new ideas. And, you know, Prudential Plaza was really the first building to do major, major amenities. It really did change the game in terms of, you know, the amenities arms race that everyone talks about today. You know, we built a 13,000 square foot outdoor deck first, you know, like private tenant lounge space, 13,000 square foot fitness center. You know, the building was 2.3 million square feet. So everything we had to do there was on a large scale. But that building, in my opinion, changed the game in terms of amenities. Certainly in Chicago, I honestly think at that time it may have, it had led to charge in the entire country. Really, I don't think anyone had executed a strategy like what we did at Prudential Plaza. And then that carried over to Aon, and then that carried over to the post office. So, you know, timing was great. You know, we were working on big projects with an incredible owner in 601 West Companies that, you know, trusted us to execute strategies on their behalf, did anything that we really told them that they needed to do to lease the space. So I was blessed to have good owners, you know, good partners. And then, you know, the one thing I think, you know, I should tap myself on the back. I mean, giving presentations and dragging brokers through buildings and selling them on the dream and selling them on the story and telling the story, that is something that I've always done very well. And I feel like that's something that is one of my best skill sets. And, you know, being able to marry that up again with good strategy, good owners, good plans. And let's be honest, we had a really good market. Market was going up. Tenants were taking office space. People were changing the way they utilize space coming out after 08, 09, you know, going to a more open workspace, larger floor plates. Honestly, like, all the stars really did align. I mean, people do talk about, you know, luck, and you do need luck in our industry. I think you need luck in almost anything you do. You do make your own luck. And I think, you know, I don't even know if it's one of our core values. We're working on EOS right now for Madison Rose, but, you know, the law of attraction is a real thing. And I think the fact that, you know, I typically have a very positive attitude, even when things are not going great, you know, I find a way to dig down and find, you know, hope and positivity in something. And I think, to your point, I do have a lot of energy and I am a naturally positive, happy person. And I think that translates into tours, presentations, when you're dealing with brokers. And I think that sells. And, you know, that's one of the things that I do when I look to hire brokers at Madison Rose is, like, I look for people that have that kind of law of attraction. There's something about them that is just a little bit different. And to be candid, you know, we haven't hired any brokers at Madison Rose that had any leasing experience. So every person we have hired has either come straight out of college or has come from the industry that maybe has worked on the tenant rep side. And I've essentially trained and worked with them to be landlord brokers. Because I don't think what we do is necessarily rocket science. I think you can learn it relatively easy. It's just through attrition and getting reps and doing deals. But one thing you can't teach is, you know, someone's energy, someone's positive attitude, work ethic, discipline, curiosity. Those are all things that, you know, I look for to hire people. And then it's like we can teach them the rest. And so I did have a lot of success at a young age. But a lot of it has to be in the right place, right time, and being surrounded by the right people and having the right owners. And like I said, you know, some of it's luck. Some of it, you know, is, you know, you make your own luck. But I was just blessed to be put in some really good situations and also having the ability to take advantage of it and execute very well.
Yeah, no, that all makes sense. That's really cool that you guys have trained up all your brokers from the ground up, so to speak.
I think that's like being the dad in me now. You know, I have two little girls that are 8 and 9. And I think that, you know, as you get older we're not old. I mean, we're 41, but I mean, I feel like as you take the next step, and especially if you start to see your little kids start to become, you know, people. I mean, obviously, you know, being a parent is one of the greatest things in the world. It's also one of the most challenging things in the world. I kind of look at all these younger kids that work for me kind of in a way that I look at my kids, and you get joy and satisfaction out of seeing them win and seeing them get, you know, excited and giddy about doing deals. You know, the same way that I was, you know, when I was their age, and you get a deal done and it's like the coolest thing of all time. And so now, you know, I get excitement and I seeing them get excitement. So, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, no, it totally is. And, we're going to carry your positive attitude over to the current state of the office market, the turmoil in office in just a second. But I really like that point because I also am a believer in it because I like my job. I like putting deals together. And there's a trend in the legal industry that actually started in law school where everyone's like, oh, I'm so stressed out. I'm so overworked. And like being a lawyer sucks. Like, no, I really like being a lawyer. And like, I like to surround myself with lawyers that like being lawyers and doing jobs and doing deals or litigating or whatever it is that your deal is. I feel like it really does. It is a characteristic that translates very well into success, like just having a positive outlook. And it's hard when you're not there mentally. But I think that trying to get there and trying to focus on having that positive attitude does really go a long way. You're the first guest I've ever had that's actually said that part out loud. Like that having a positive attitude is a huge thing that you look for. And I'm a believer in that.
Yeah. I mean, we've been in turmoil. I mean, we launched Madison Rose 4 years ago in, a month before COVID happened, so we were literally hit into turmoil. And honestly, the last 7 years for me, and this, we probably didn't plan to go in this direction, but this does, my wife was diagnosed with breast cancer 8 years ago. She, had to, it was 18 months of getting her back together from that. And then right after COVID, my daughter hit a tree snow tubing out of Montana, where we were kind of taking respite when everything was shut down. And she had to be airlifted from Big Sky to Salt Lake City. And, I was in the ICU with her for 10 days. And again, that's where having a positive attitude and being an overly positive person with a lot of energy, I feel like really helped her get through that. And then, then a year later, my wife, had a brain tumor, which was a result of a brain tumor she had when she was 12. And so over the last 7 years, really since like R2 and Madison Rose has been around, I mean, there's been a lot of stuff that has really thrown us from loops. And I think, to your point, again, law of attraction, just trying to find things to hold on to and be positive has gotten my family and my teams like through all that stuff. And, obviously we're probably going to talk about, the office world, which has been in the doldrums in the last 4 years. We continue to find ways to dance between the raindrops, if you will. And we are at Madison Rose have continued to find success. And I think when others haven't, and it's because, we feel that, any office building can lease when you're at a market of 150 million square feet, despite what the vacancy rate is. And so I'm sure you probably have a question that's going to dive into the market. So I don't want to get ahead of you. Maybe I'll let you bring it up yourself. But yeah, I mean, I feel like we're having success because we are trying to find positive, we're trying to find the positivity in every solution, every office solution and offering that we have. And then also, when we're running around town selling it, I mean, we do it with a smile on our face. And I think there's something to be said for that.
Yeah, for sure. And thanks for sharing your family story with us. I appreciate that. I know philanthropy is very big for you and for Madison Rose. And you can learn more about that on their website for sure. And I know you do a big event each year.
Moonlight.
That's right. But tell us about what you're seeing in the office market.
We are sitting at what is probably the highest vacancy rate in history in Chicago, if not close, at about 21%. We have about 8 million square feet of sublease space. So when you factor all that in, you're probably, 25% vacant of 161 million square foot market, which is downtown Chicago. There's another 150 million square feet out in the suburbs, but downtown is about 160 million square feet. The impact of the work from home, the impact of just less demand, the impact of tenants downsizing by anywhere from 20 to 30%, sometimes more as a result of the work from home. That has obviously put a massive dent into real estate. Obviously there are, Chicago's not, first of all, not the only city that's going through it. We unfairly get picked on. We have such bad PR because we just get trashed by the coastal markets on how bad Chicago is and the crime and whatnot. But, you go to any other major coastal city and they are dealing with very similar problems that we are, and especially from an office standpoint. And when you get to the smaller markets, it's even worse there because, the bigger markets at least have a lot more tenants to potentially play musical chairs and occupy buildings in vacancy. When you're in these smaller markets and the spigot turns off of demand and you're in a small market, there is not a lot to hang on to as an office owner if you have a lot of vacancy. It's a real big benefit to be in a third largest market in the country like Chicago, where at the end of the day, even if we're 25% vacant, 160 million square foot market, average tenant lease term 6 to 7 years, there's probably between 12 and 14 million square feet of tenants that have to make decisions each year. So if you're a building owner and you have capital and you're doing the right things, depending on the size of your building, you don't need a massive percentage of those tenants that are going to be in the market or can move. And that's one of those, the positivity we look at, in Chicago is what I just explained there. But yeah, so, you know, on top of the work from home, interest rates has totally whacked building owners. Obviously, that is a massive issue because, you know, a lot of owners bought buildings on floating debt. When your interest rate doubles, it means, you know, if you're paying 10 million interest, I mean, it's going to 20 million. That completely blows your deal. On top of tenants downsizing, so you're losing occupancy. Demand is not high, so it's hard to get new tenants in. You know, we're probably sitting on 60% of buildings in Chicago can't even perform. But again, that's what we think about when we put together a positive spin, because if 60% of buildings can't even really do deals right now, or they need to do lender workouts, or they're just kind of in purgatory because they don't want to put good money at bad, that means that the amount of buildings that are competing for even less deals is smaller. And so it actually, for the people that can buy buildings, redevelop buildings, buy at a new low basis, potentially do lower rents, have TIs where other owners don't have TIs to spend, all of a sudden your competitive set has gotten really, really small. And so that's like kind of the investment thesis that we have at a 150 North Michigan, for example. You know, there's significant buildings, significant amount of buildings in the East Loop that cannot do deals. You know, whether they can't come up to the capital to do deals, whether they do a deal, their building's kind of in purgatory because they need to work a lender workout. What if perhaps they're in receivership? You know, if the East Loop is, you know, 14 million square feet, but only 5 million square feet, you know, can actually transact, I feel pretty good about that being the brand new building that has fresh capital and is going to make fresh improvements to the building. So that is just one of the investment thesis on 150 is just right now, until, you know, the river completely blows out and we're kind of in the first inning of buildings starting to trade and change hands and doing lender sales. We're just kind of starting to see it happen now.
I was going to interrupt you for one point. And I don't do this very often, but I think what you said is super important. And I want to just kind of slow it down and talk about the tenant improvement allowances and
sure.
good money, which is what you're just saying. So 150 North Michigan, for those, that's the adventurous and babysitting building. How old I am with the diamond top that you'll see. You're looking at any picture of Chicago skyline from the lake forward. It's the diamond building. So that is what R2 just bought at what turned out to be an unbelievable deal, tremendous value, discount from where it was valued and transacted, you know, 5-7 years ago. You would know. But is that what Matt's pointing out is when you're a business looking to lease space, usually you want tenant improvement allowance dollars to build out your space so that you have a place, because most of these office buildings are not set up that you can just turn the key and your entire company can just walk in and plug right in and just start to use it for an office space. Usually you need some sort of financial dollars from your landlord in order to build out the space so that it makes sense for your business. But what Matt's pointing out is a lot of these buildings are so distressed that they don't have those dollars. So if you're a tenant and you're looking to lease space for your company, like you really are restricted now to only talking to the building owners that have money in order to get your business in a place that feels good where you can operate.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Exactly right. And I think that's why, you know, that's a silver lining right now. And that's why, you know, we're flying to New York and meeting with new capital partners for R2 and why we're meeting with the family offices and the, you know, the private wealth groups that, you know, are in New York and some other places that, you know, are willing to take the risks. Because right now the institutional buyers, they are not in the market, which is a huge advantage for people like R2. For example, I mean, the smaller local operations are going to have opportunities to buy buildings at what will likely be the lowest prices we may ever see. I mean, literally, Chicago is on absolute sale. And you know, $93 for 150 North Michigan is a good price, but you're going to see stuff trade lower with similar fundamentals. You know, 150 has 60% of the building has almost 7 years of weighted average lease term remaining. So for those that don't understand that, I mean, that means that, you know, that there's 60% of the building that is very sticky, where you have cash flow coming in from those tenants without risk of them or with low risk of them leaving. So that means, you know, we just need to go lease, you know, 20-30% of the building to get new tenants So that deal set up really well. I mean, the previous owner, CBREI, spent a ton of money, very institutional ownership group, but spent a ton of money on amenities and on the lobby and in a lot of infrastructure and things that, you know, are more back of the house that you cannot see, that we get to take advantage of. And so we not only are we going to, you know, invest significant dollars in even improving the lobbies and the restrooms and the corridors and looking to do some really cool LED content displays in the diamond, ground floor activation, looking to put a bar in on the second floor, again, new amenities, health and wellness lounges. Like, you know, with that low basis, we can go in there and spend those dollars and even take advantage of dollars that are already been spent and massively improve the building and still be at a rent that is relatively close to where they were before. And that's going to be the advantage that we have at that building. And by the way, you know, the 150 North Michigan, in a world where health and wellness is really top of mind for tenants right now, you are in a part of the city where you have access to sunlight, you have access to parks and lakes, you have access to a 24/7 live work play area. You know, you have hotels, Arlo, Pendry are right down the street from us. You have multiple new residential office buildings, you have retail, you have 17 million visitors that come to Millennium Park each year. So it keeps those streets busy and activated, you know, when, you know, other parts of the loop don't get that kind of vibe. We really believe, although that location is not on top of the trains, we believe that that location is a type of location that will always have interest from tenants and even maybe more so in the future. And that was really the investment thesis on 150 North Michigan. And really the partner on the building is Lagfin, which is a holding company of the Campari family, the spirits family out of Italy. And, you know, when they came to Chicago and they saw the asset and they saw the location, they knew that this is a world-class building that they wanted to be involved in.
Yeah, that's cool. Big fan of the product.
big Aperol Spritz guy.
it's not on top of the trains, but it is on top of the L trains. So you do have a lot of access to young talent.
Lots of parking, covered underground parking nearby. So we know people in Chicago like to drive. It's like a dirty little secret. Although our traffic sucks, everyone will still put themselves through misery to drive to work. So the parking is equally as important, in my opinion.
Do you have any data or like any idea of anecdotally if driving is up since the pandemic, if people are more reluctant to use mass transit? I mean, it certainly seems like for a city that complains about people not getting to the loop, driving to the loop sucks. There's tons of traffic. You're like, how, if we're down on the amount of people going to the loop, why is the traffic so bad?
Yeah, we don't have data. The only data I have is just from being down here every single day. I live and breathe the city. I mean, I'm down here from 6 a.m. until, you know, 6 p.m. And one of my employees, Adam Pines at Madison Rose, takes the train every day from Highland Park. And sometimes we'll walk back that way together in the afternoon and grab a beer by the train. And it's bumping right now. The train is absolutely bumping. I mean, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday is as busy as I've seen it in a very long time. And traffic right now is about as bad as I've seen it in a long time as well. And obviously there's construction factors that come into play there. But it seems like we are back right now. It seems like we are in a place that we've been wanting to be at for the last 4 years. I mean, are we back to what we were pre-pandemic? I don't think so yet. But it's, you know, on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, it sure does feel that way. And I know that's the kind of the days of the week that people have a tendency to come downtown and work, because if you only have to work downtown 3 days a week, why not be a Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday so you can have a, you know, 4 day weekend? Like, we get it. So, but I don't have that data, but that's something that I actually should look into, because I'm working on a new project, 311 Huron, where we have we can park 1.3 cars per thousand. And we literally, that's actually where I'm sitting right now. You know, the Ohio feeder is literally right out the window. This has the best parking ratio and access to the highway of any building that I've ever worked on. And our whole story is parking and access to getting on the highway. So I'm actually going to do a study on that per your comment, and I'll get back to you.
That sounds good.
It's a good idea. It's a good idea.
Yeah. What's the lending market like? I don't actually know if you guys use debt for your acquisition, or, you know, how are lenders from your perspective looking at investing in office?
Well, you know, a lot of the deals that are for sale and very limited amounts of deals have traded. I think it was maybe only five in 2023, and I think one so far here in 2024. So it is really, really slow. And a lot of the sales that I'm seeing right now are lender driven. But what we did at 150 North Michigan, which is what a lot of people are trying to do when they're buying some of these bigger assets, is seller financing. So, you know, MetLife, who was the lender on 150, offered us seller financing for 150 North Michigan, which allowed us to make that deal, you know, much more palatable. And I know buildings like a 161 North Clark, they are offering seller financing, and I think they're getting close to transacting on that building. But that is, you know, what we're seeing now in terms of getting financing. So far from some of the stuff that we're looking at, it hasn't been overly difficult to find capital and to find someone that'll lend on some of the stuff that we're looking at. It's just the interest rates are much higher than what, you know, people historically over the last decade have been used to, you know, doing. But it's fine. If you know what the interest rate's going to be going in, you can really underwrite, you know, what your outcome's going to be. It's when, you know, you're hit with higher interest rates as part of floating debt that was not expected, and your interest rates double in the middle of a redevelopment plan. And that's obviously what whacks you. But that's there. You can get it. I think the biggest challenge, you know, is really just underwriting occupancy. What are going to be, you know, how many tenants are going to downsize? What are you going to look from a renewal standpoint? And I think another thing that's really hard to predict is taxes. Our tax problem in Chicago is a real, real issue. I mean, I think we may be the second highest tax city in the United States. We may be first. But, you know, the fact that it's really hard to pinpoint what your taxes are going to be, because the assessor will assess taxes at something, and usually it's something goofy. And then you go to the board of review, and, you know, sometimes they will side with you and you get your taxes lowered. And I think one of the things that, you know, people are just struggling with is what are the taxes going to be? Because it's not crystal clear. And so I think that has brought in a lot more challenges into underwriting buildings, is the taxes, as opposed to can I get debt? Can I get equity? And can I execute a leasing strategy? To me, the taxes is a lot more of the quagmire that is really hard to meander right now. And we can thank our assessor for that.
Yeah, it's just a huge variable. You know, it's like almost, yeah, like, tell me what it's going to be. And
we've seen multiple scenarios where, like, buildings will trade. Yeah, I'm not going to name the buildings, but if, for example, a building traded at $17 million, it was assessed at, you know, $24 million. It's a client of mine. It's like, I don't understand if two reputable organizations negotiated an arm's length transaction to develop what market is for this building, and that is $17 million. How can the building be worth $24 million? And I think those are the types of things that people are just not fully understanding or agreeing with. It really doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Market is determined by the market. And, you know, if you have an assessor that is assessing buildings at higher than what market determines a building should be worth, that's a little goofy, just because, you know, he thinks that the building is, you know, should be worth more. You just can't do things that way. But anyways, I don't want to go down a rabbit hole there.
All fair points. Well, tell me about the Board of Trade. It's one of the trophy buildings in Chicago. Art Zoo has been involved with that. And, you know, my wedding pictures were in front of that building. A lot of people's work. It's such a beautiful building. It's such a one that people outside of Chicago know of, and there's a long history to it.
Yeah, Board of Trade is our hottest building, and is arguably one of the two or three literally hottest buildings in the market. We took the building over in February, March of last year. We've done 280,000 square feet of leasing in that building, which is just probably hard to fathom for a lot of people. I think we're almost pushing 120,000 to 130,000 square feet of new leasing in that building, and it literally is white hot. We work with Apollo. Apollo is the lender in the building. They took the building back deed in lieu of foreclosure. First building that group has ever actually owned. Listen, we have executed a strategy that has been a thoughtful strategy, probably one of the most unique strategies that I've ever executed in my career, where we've only been focusing on spaces that have already been improved by the previous ownership group that we go back in and improve a little bit more. We call them second generation spec spaces. Right now, the market is being driven by rent ready space for the most part. Certainly in the tenant sizes that we're chasing after, which is 2 to 25,000 square feet, those tenants are looking for move in ready space. You know, they talk about the flight to quality all the time, and no doubt the trophy class world is probably at a 2-3% vacancy rate right now. And we're seeing a lot of flight to quality, but flight to quality can also mean, you know, a flight to a nicer suite. And, you know, in our case, you know, being a, you know, B plus building, in my opinion, with all of our new amenities coming in, I'd love to say it's an A minus, but, the flight to quality is tenants coming out of other buildings where the new space is significantly nicer than the space they came from before. And so it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to go to a trophy building to, you know, be part of that flight to quality. And so we're spending, you know, anywhere from $20 to $34 a foot in TI on these second generation spec spaces. We, you know, we've identified 16. I think we've leased almost all of them. Now we're going and looking at, you know, more spaces to work within. And in these older buildings, construction costs are really high. I mean, you have to remove old ceilings. Sometimes you have to remove old, you know, asbestos pucks from the ceilings. They take a lot of money to retrofit. And so the previous owner probably did 70% of the building. And so a lot of the spaces we're getting back, you know, the majority of the work has been done. You know, the ceilings have been opened up. The MEP has been upgraded and changed out. And so we can go in there and we can focus on finishes and materials and make the space look different than how it was being marketed before. And we're having a ton of success doing that. We just put some new furniture in the ground floor historical lobby. We just upgraded the second floor lobby. We are going to be doing a really cool event space in the atrium on 12. We have an incredible outdoor deck that was already there. And, you know, we rebranded the building back to the Chicago Board of Trade building. The building was branded to 141 West Jackson when the previous owner bought the building, because the building, because, you know, trading was in the doldrums and they thought that, you know, the trading, it didn't, you know, wasn't a good, you know, wasn't kind of the identity that they wanted, and that maybe, you know, that industry was on its kind of way out and it wasn't really something to celebrate. Well, the first thing we did is we rebranded it back to the Chicago Board of Trade building, because we do want to celebrate the history. And that is what R2 is all about. We buy historical buildings. We buy buildings that matter. We buy buildings that we feel have lost their way and deserve more. And that's exactly what the Chicago Board of Trade building is. And that's really been what our marketing program is to remind people that the building matters. And it's important that people lease build space in that building, because if that building goes vacant and it can't be converted to residential, you have an iconic building, like you said, one of the most trophy class buildings in all of Chicago, not from maybe a design and, you know, year built standpoint, but it is an important building. You know, hundreds of people every day walking into that lobby, and they look around and they look at that Art Deco architecture and they take their wedding photos in front of it. Like, this is a building that matters. There's a lot of buildings on LaSalle Street, in my opinion, that I call suburban tuna cans that, you know, could be knocked down, and we can create pocket parks and we can do stuff, you know, and create light and air for other buildings that matter. The Chicago Board of Trade building is a building that Chicago needs. And so, you know, you mentioned the salt shed earlier, same thing. You know, when we bought the Morton Salt building, we were the only group that didn't want to knock it down and build condos. And that's why we were awarded the building. And, you know, looking at an adaptive reuse at a time when COVID was happening and we're converting it to office at a time when everyone was running away from office, even though we were having success in the neighborhoods, again, buying buildings like the Morton Salt buildings, buildings that matter, that is kind of the mission and the ethos of R2. And in that building, listen, we aren't the type of people that are going to just force office if it's not the best use. And that's why we brought in partners like Blue Star and Craig Golden's team and the 16 On Center guys to help develop this music venue, the Salt Shed, which is, you mentioned you're going to a concert there. And honestly, I think it's probably the best music venue in Chicago. I think it's probably one of the top 10 music venues in the country. And I think there's been a publication saying it's the top new music venue in the United States. And it's spectacular. And it's taking something that matters and is important to the city and reconfiguring it into something that is useful, which is, you know, more entertainment space for the city. City needed a new concert venue. The location is absolutely fabulous. That Goose Island location is literally in the center of Chicago. If you're coming in from any neighborhood, in Chicago, it literally is as centralized as you can get. I mean, the Amazon same day pickup is like two blocks away from that location. So it's great for everyone, you know, to get to a musical event there. It's just maybe a little bit of a pain in the ass right now. to get to with all the traffic. But that's the ethos of R2, man. I mean, in 150 North Michigan, that building matters. I mean, it's one of the most photographed buildings in the world. That's why we like to focus on those types of buildings. That's why we like to reinvest in those types of buildings. And we think that, you know, with a good marketing strategy and passion and the law of attraction, that we can convince people that them becoming tenants in those buildings, they're making a difference. And that's really the goal.
Oh, that's awesome. That's a good way to kind of tie this all together. But yeah, for people that are outside of Chicago, coming into Chicago, go see a show at the Salt Shed. It's my favorite venue right now. United Center, Soldier Field, it can be a little sterile for music. So I think that the Salt Shed, going to see John Batiste tonight, Grammy Award winner. And yeah, it's beautiful because it overlooks the city. They took that this old packaging warehouse of Morton Salt, and everyone knows that the girl holding the umbrella is the Morton Salt symbol. And they preserve that, they save that, and then the rest of it is an indoor and outdoor venue. It's beautiful. You guys did a fabulous job.
Yeah, I appreciate it. We are awesome partners. I mean, Blue Star, again, they are super creative folks. They operate a lot. 16 On Center operates a lot of Chicago's best restaurants. And so it's a great marriage of bringing in two groups. They have great eye for design and great vision. And I mean, it was flawlessly executed. We won redevelopment of the year for both the Greater Food Depository Awards, as well as the Real Estate Journal Awards. And I think it's just a testament to, you know, the teams that worked on that. And obviously Matt Garrison, who's just a visionary in himself and identified, you know, a project that nobody else could see past, knocking it down. And so, you know, it's great for the city.
Yeah. Well, Matt, thanks for your time. Thanks for your energy. Thanks for your positivity. And appreciate thanks for coming on the show. Appreciate it.
Go Illini.
That's right.
Thanks, Phil.
This publication is intended for general information purposes only and does not and is not intended to constitute legal advice. The listener should consult with legal counsel to determine how laws or decisions discussed herein apply to the listener's specific circumstances.